Hi and welcome back. This is episode number 295. Today I am joined by RJ Ledesma. It was an absolute whirlwind of a conversation with RJ, as you will hear. He has an incredible resume, which again I'm going to allow him to introduce himself because I certainly can't do it justice. But RJ is intimately involved in the small, medium, and micro business communities here in the Philippines. So it's fantastic to get him on the podcast and get his insight into business in the Philippines. And of course, we talk about normal business, but as well, we talk about business in the new normal, which is with the coronavirus and how people are adjusting and coping, and as well, how he is adjusting his businesses to the new normal. So I had a really good conversation. If you want any of the show notes, go to outsourceaccelerator.com/podcast. Enjoy. Just a quick note before we get started. If you do enjoy this podcast, please share it. Please get someone else to have a listen and share it around the community because that will help our podcast grow and help us get increasingly better guests on the podcast to keep you more informed and entertained. So share this with a friend today. RJ Ledesma, it's great to have you on the show. You're a man of many skills and talents and also businesses. I suppose the easiest way and most effective way is to introduce yourself to the audience.
Well, thanks so much, Derek, for having me on your podcast. I've been looking forward to it because I always get to read the Outsource Accelerator articles and I get to see all these prominent people that you've had in the show. So again, thanks so much for having me over here. I often tell people I wear many hats and I wish I had just as many heads. And I guess the way to preface this discussion is really to say I'm sort of like a serial entrepreneur where I do many things, where I use what we call here locally in the Philippines, my laway, my saliva for some. And one is you know, others are, some are skills-based, some are competency-based. So first of all, I run Mercato Central, which is sort of like the largest night food market here in the Philippines. And we actually transitioned into becoming a small food business incubator. And during this crisis, we actually transitioned even further to becoming an online business where we took all of our vendors and consolidated them online. And I can share with you a bit more about that in a bit. I also am the co-founder of Easy Franchise. It's a digital platform that connects franchise owners, people like the owners of generic drugstores or pharmaceuticals, convenience stores, the potato corner. We connect them online with franchise investors or franchisees, both local Filipinos and Filipino OFWs as well. And if they can't run the business, we actually have a franchise management team that can run the business for them. And aside from that one, I also put up a business called EnterPH together with my business partner, Attorney Rocky Chan, which is really a consultancy firm that helps foreign businesses offshore and outsource to the Philippines, taking advantage of the cost savings here in the Philippines for foreign businesses to do businesses here in the Philippines. So that's more of like the serial entrepreneur side. And I'm very happy to say that particularly for Mercato and the innovative business model that we've created over there, it's reaped us a lot of awards. I actually won for that one a Agora Award. That's sort of like the Academy Awards for marketing here in the Philippines. Back in 2018, I won the Agora Awards for achievement in entrepreneurship for small-scale businesses. And last year, we won Asia CEO of the Award, Asia CEO Awards SME of the Year for 2019, Asia Leaders Award SME of the Year for 2019, and the ASEAN Award for SME Excellence in Innovation, Philippine winner. And just this year, in the midst of the crisis, we found out that we also won the first ever Man Smith Award for Innovation, particularly for our business model. And so that goes for Mercato Central. Over here in the Philippines, I'm also a host, Derek. So I've been host for many, many years. I've been a host. I often tell people before I grew armpit hair, I was already a host on TV. So for many, many years. And I host the show. Currently, I host the show on Bloomberg Philippines / One News called Bright Ideas, where what I do is I host a show called the show that I do is a show where I talk to a lot of tech startup companies and local startups. And actually, after talking to all those companies, those are where I got my ideas to launch my own companies as well. And I also host a show called Philippine Realty TV on CNN Philippines. I host a show called Philippine Realty because my business background is actually in real estate development. My family is in the real estate development business. And I actually graduated with a master's degree in real estate development from the Massachusetts Institute of Technology. And I'm currently a board governor of the Subdivision and Housing Developers Association. And I'm a partner of Filipino Homes, which is the largest real estate marketing company here in the Philippines. I often describe Filipino Homes as sort of like it's like a startup company disrupting the real estate industry when it comes to marketing. So that's with regard to hosting. And I am a three-time awardee for Best Male MC and a Hall of Famer for Best Male MC at the Alim Awards, which is sort of like the Academy Awards for live performance arts here in the Philippines. Aside from that one, I also serve as the honorary consul of Monaco to the Philippines, among other things that I do. And prior to that one, since I still have 10 minutes left on my in my schedule, I used to be actually an editor-in-chief of several men's magazines, lifestyle magazines, the late great Uno magazine, Emmanuel magazine. I was also a columnist for the Philippine Star. I was actually a humor columnist for the past 10 years. I produced about six books. They were mostly best-selling because my mom bought most of those books, and I was a three-time National Book Awards finalist. So those are just a couple of things which I've been doing for the past several years.
My gosh, RJ, that's quite a CV, isn't it? It must take an entire book just to outline your past career.
And it informs things, yeah.
It seems that you have your ear to the ground with small and medium-sized businesses in the Philippines. You know, that certainly shines through for me. And I think that's where, you know, we have resonated and sort of, you know, found a lot of interest together. Interestingly, of course, you know, we have just recorded a podcast with Rocky Chan of Enter PH as well. So there's obviously a lot of alignments, and, you know, it is a small community here. So it's really great to you know you and have you as a part of the community and finally get you on the show. You know, RJ, I want to focus on the business aspects, and, you know, this is a business audience, and it's really valuable insight that you can bring to the table in terms of what you are seeing on the ground today. And of course, you know, it's valuable any day, but, you know, as we go through Corona, as we go through COVID, there's so many changes.
That's right.
As you say, it brings a lot of opportunities as well as a lot of hardship. Just paint the picture. What are you seeing out there at the moment, the landscape for business in the Philippines?
Well, I often tell people that the first of all, you know, it's very important that they maintain a sort of entrepreneurial mindset when they look at business in the Philippines at this point in time, especially if you are a small or big business owner, because we are in the stage of what Steve Jobs calls the beginner's mindset, right? Whether you're a big company or a small company, your companies have been leveled because of you've been financially depleted by this crisis, right? So it's like you're starting from scratch again. It's what I call a beginner's mindset, but more importantly, it's an investment in, again, what you call the entrepreneurial mindset, where you're able to look at your environment with a fresh set of business eyes. I often tell people, I often use the comparison of wearing a pair of spectacles of glasses, right? If I forget wearing my glasses, I cannot see things with sharpness or clarity. And in this situation, but if I put on my glasses, I see things very, very clearly. But let's say, for example, in this crisis, if I were to look at it as a regular person or just as a business owner and not as an entrepreneur, I might feel very helpless and anxious about the current business situation. But all of a sudden, if I put on my, what I call my entrepreneurial lens, I'm just looking at new business opportunities of how to, quote unquote, pivot the business. What are the innovations I can create in business? What more can I do in business right now to change the situation? And that's oftentimes what I tell people. I am a Go Negosyo, the Philippine Center for Entrepreneurship. There's a group of mentors who travel the country, and I'm part of that group. And that's what I often tell people, that the most important thing, especially during this crisis, is the idea of having that entrepreneurial mindset where you're constantly looking for, okay, there is social distancing, there was a lockdown, these are what's happening right now. Those are pain points, right? But if you were an entrepreneur, the way you look at these pain points is that these are not problems, but these are problems that you are able to solve and turn into opportunities. The Chinese have a word for it. They call it Wei Qi, right? Wei Qi just means that in crisis, there is opportunity. And for many people right now, the opportunity is found in the challenge brought about by this epidemic. And that's what I want to really bring forth to people here right now. Derek, you know, when we travel, I've traveled to Bataan, Batangas, Bicol, to all the provinces, and I give a lot of talks to many entrepreneurs, so budding entrepreneurs. And oftentimes, the first question that they ask me is, you know, sir, what is a good business to put up? And when they ask me that question, I often tell them, I don't think that's the right question for an entrepreneur to ask. It's because if you ask the question, what's a good business to put up, it presupposes that you want to copy somebody else's business rather than think of an idea that is originally your own. Because in the Philippines, we call it have you heard of lechon manok or those pearl tea shakes or even milk tea, right? People just keep on copying somebody else's business model, and their success only goes as so far as it's successful until somebody else copies them as well, right? So I tell people that if you're thinking of what business to put up, then this is the question that you must be able to ask yourself. And it's the same question, Derek, that VCs, venture capitalists, or investors often ask people during pitching competitions to the startups. They ask them, what problem are you trying to solve, right? Or what are these pain points that you're experiencing right now? And pain points are basically irritations. Because if something irritates me, it probably irritates you as well. And if I can solve our irritation, that's where I make money. And that's what I say. That's basically what I say. That in this crisis, yes, we're being irritated by problems as well, but you don't have to think of them as problems. You just think of them as something that we can solve. So let's say, for example, Derek, my first example of why we put up Enter PH in the first place was that we realized that what is the irritation of many foreign investors who want to come to the Philippines or foreign businesses that possibly want to offshore or outsource to the Philippines. For the bigger companies, for the bigger call centers which come over here, maybe they've got big law firms that they want to approach who can handle their business. But the irritation for smaller businesses who have realized that maybe the Philippines is a good place to do business in is that there's a high cost of entry if they go to these high legal firms. And at the same time, you know, it prevents them from coming over here. So we said, oh, so there's an irritation that we can solve. Let's go for the small and medium-sized entrepreneurs and startup businesses who we can approach, who want to use the Philippines as a possible area for cost savings for their businesses and a source of their talent pool by addressing this irritation among these businesses. So for me, it's all about, that's why EnterPH was developed in the first place, to help these small and medium-sized foreign businesses to offshore outsource to the Philippines. So you're all here about solving problems. And the great thing, like you, Derek, you're here in the Philippines thinking about the same thing, that outsourcing is probably a gold mine over here, or else you would have left with the rest of them during the pandemic. But you're here in the Philippines. In the Philippines, there are so many problems that can be turned into solutions. It's just that we who live here for such a long time are just so, what I call, thick-skinned, that we don't see them anymore as something that we can solve, but something that we just have to live with. But if you think about it, there are so many problems which we can solve over here that foreign startups will benefit by coming over here by solving these problems. What are they? Financial inclusion, remittance, logistics, health, insurance, agriculture. We are so used to these pain points over here that we don't think of solutions for them anymore. But again, if we put on that entrepreneurial mindset, then it really changes a lot of different things. We learn how to think, turn these problems into something we need to address. I often say irritation leads to inspiration and eventually into innovation, and we create new business models. And if you'll allow me, Derek, during this crisis, there were five sort of business models which really emerged for me, which were really innovative. One of the first ones which I realized, which was a really great business model that people started coming up with, is what I call the business of leveraging asymmetric information. Now, when it comes to leveraging asymmetric information, it's sort of like, you know, why do you go to a stockbroker in the first place? You go to a stockbroker in the first place because he knows more than you about the stock market. So you pay him money to invest his stocks for you. But that business model is basically how the internet has grown. How many people have created businesses out of the internet, right? For example, if you look at something like a Zomato, how did Zomato grow as a business? Prior to Zomato, how did you want to know what restaurants to eat in? You would ask different people what restaurants to eat in through word of mouth. What did Zomato do? They started gathering all the information. They crowdsourced people's information of reviewing restaurants. They put that online, and eventually restaurants started paying them money to get advertised on a Zomato site. So they were leveraging asymmetric information. They knew more about restaurant reviews than anybody else, and eventually they got people to pay them for that. So that's one sort of asymmetric information I've seen coming out of this crisis, because that's why so many hyperlocal sites have been set up on Viber, or so many new groups have been set up, because people want to know where to buy this, where to buy that. Another model which came up during this time is what I call, in terms of innovation, is borrowing business models from other industries. And this is a very interesting case because, for example, I often tell people, remember, you know, when you would buy coupons to get discounts in restaurants. People would, I mean, right now the idea seems kind of absurd to me that you would spend money to get a discount in a restaurant, because there's an app called Eatigo. And how does the Eatigo app work? Eatigo app is basically you come over to a restaurant, you say you've reserved with them. When you show them that you've reserved in that restaurant, you can get up to 50% off on food and drinks. But here, which is totally different, you didn't spend any money to get 50% off. When with a coupon, you have to buy it to get a discount. So I was wondering, where was Eatigo making its money? And I had a chance to speak to the founder of Eatigo when he was here in the Philippines for my show Bright Ideas, and I asked him about it. And this is what I found out. He told me, RJ, I did not look at the restaurant industry when I put up Eatigo. I was actually looking at the model of, let's say, the airline industry when I put up Eatigo. And I asked him, how is that? He said, RJ, let's say that an airplane flies and there's an empty seat on that airplane. That's an opportunity loss for the airline industry. So what do? Instead of having an opportunity loss, they sell that vacant seat ahead of time to discount sites, and they probably share the profit of that seat, right? And he said, well, how about restaurants? Aren't there times when there are lag times in restaurants when nobody's eating there? From 2 to 3 p.m., from 3 to 4 p.m., maybe from 11 to 12 at midnight? So there's an awesome opportunity loss for restaurants when nobody's seated on those chairs. So instead of that having the chair empty, why don't we also sell it to a discount site and split the profit? So Eatigo is that discount site. That's why if you go to Eatigo, you get the biggest discounts when you eat there at the times when nobody else is eating there. Now,
And
I have another one. It's called...
We won't go through the whole five, otherwise we're going to quickly run out of time. But, resonated with your comment that, you know, people are looking for business ideas.
Yes, that's right.
Looking how they can access opportunities. And the majority, the default is to go into replication, you know,
whether exactly.
It's a bubble tea or, and you see that a lot with developing economies.
That's right. That's right.
In that, you know, there's a lot of small business or micro business, and they're all just kind of stall owners without necessarily the resource to get creative with their opportunities. Now, you know, where do you see the balance of people just needing to effectively feed themselves and secure a living versus going out on a limb and, you know, creating and innovating and driving change? Is that necessarily possible in all aspects of society?
Creativity doesn't have to involve a lot of money. Creativity just involves a lot of resiliency in terms of your thinking. I mean, that's what having the entrepreneurial mindset is all about. I recall that my business partner, Jose Magsaysay Jomag, the guy who founded Potato Corner, he actually During the height of the economic crisis in 1998, the Asian economic crisis, they went down from 140 restaurants to down to 40 franchises at that time. But he learned so much that he was able to rebuild the business into being into 2,000 plus branches in the Philippines by the end of 2020. And when this crisis occurred, his mind was so prepared, his mind became so resilient that when this crisis happened and they had to close down all the potato corners, what did they do? They shifted into a reseller model for all the potato corner franchises and built a potato corner army. And I'm just saying that you don't have to think that you have to spend more money. It's that you've got to learn how to pivot your business at this time. Like, for example, for my business, Mercato Central, we had to actually literally close down our business because we realized that, you know, we could no longer be a physical venue where people would go because it was a place of mass gathering and, you know, and consumer behaviors changed so quickly. So what did we do? We realized that we looked back at the essence of what our brand is all about. And that's why I often tell people, look back at the essence of what the brand is about. My brand was about incubation. So what did we do? We said there are two ways to incubate a brand. You can incubate a brand offline, brick and mortar, where people go to, but you can also incubate that brand online. So we created our own digital platform. And the digital platform, it was sort of like a distributed cloud kitchen where people, my former people who used to go to Mercato physically, could now order from any of my vendors online. And then we would fulfill that order and get it delivered to them. So we were still incubating the concept. So that was one way we pivoted the business. It was just a bit of creativity, but we didn't have to spend too much money for that one. And another way that we also pivoted for the business was this one. We realized that Mercato had generated a lot of goodwill. People know us for street food and good value for money. So right in the next couple of months, we produced our own Mercato food brand where we're actually bringing the type of food that you'll find in Mercato, like grilled pork or sisig, and will be sold right now out of convenience stores. So that way, we pivoted the model. We're still about incubation. We're still about street food. We're still about that one, but we've just found different distribution channels to bring it to the market, but at the same time still leveraging what people know about the business. So for me, that's really what it's all about being an entrepreneur at this time. People have a pain point about your business.
One of the unique value propositions I see of the Philippines, and certainly the one that I'm personally involved in, mm-hmm. RJ, is the offshore and outsourcing. And you know, I believe that the Philippines is positioned as the highest quality, you know, professionalized services in the world for offshore staffing. You know, what do you see on the ground now? There's obviously a huge umbrella that encompasses, some of the biggest businesses in the Philippines with 250,000 staff. And then right down the other end of the spectrum, there are the freelancers that are just working on these Upwork and freelancer platforms. Where do you, you've got your ear to the ground in terms of small businesses and work in the province. Where do you see that fitting into society and where do you see innovation in those aspects? This podcast is brought to you by Outsource Accelerator. We are the world's leading outsourcing marketplace and advisory. We help big and small businesses with their outsourcing needs, and we can help you too. We cover everything from business and staffing strategy, optimal outsourcing structures, implementations, and fully managed services. If you're already outsourcing, about to start, or somewhere in between, then we can ensure that you get the best from outsourcing. That's the best prices, best terms, and of course, the best results from your outsourcing practices. We list over 700 outsourcing suppliers on our website, host this leading outsourcing podcast, and have over 5,000 pages of content. Because we span the entire market, we can ensure that you get the best deal possible. We offer everything from light brokerage, co-managed services, through to fully managed solutions. Get in touch today. Visit us at outsourceaccelerator.com/quote. Mention that you're a podcast listener and we will give you special attention plus a 10% discount. This is for a limited time only. Go to outsourceaccelerator.com/quote.
Okay, that's a really great question. Now, I want to go back a bit more about crisis times. Okay, crisis, because it's going to lead directly into your question. We spoke with the IBPAP people, the Internet and Business Process Outsourcing Association of the Philippines, and this is something I found very, very interesting about what they told me. They said, RJ, did you know that the outsourcing industry grew the fastest in the Philippines from 2008 to 2010? Do you know the reason why? He said the reason why was because there was a U.S. economic recession, and that was the first time they started looking outside, one of the times that many companies were looking outside of the States to find countries where they could go where there would be cost savings for their non-essential, quote-unquote, non-essential services. So many of those companies made their way to the Philippines from 2008 to 2010. And that's when the industry grew the fastest. And this is exactly the same situation which we're seeing here right now in the Philippines, that in 2020, the pandemic occurred. But did you know that here in EnterPH, and I'm not sure if Rocky said it in his interview with you, but we've been getting a steady stream of inquiries, sometimes even more than when there wasn't COVID, from companies in the US, in Australia, other countries who want to come here particularly for cost-saving purposes. So actually, this pandemic could be actually a silver lining for the call center industry, for the BPO or offshoring industry, because it might be another time when more companies want to come over here for cost-saving purposes because they can't because there's a recession in the States or in other westernized countries. So,
absolutely. I think that's a win-win, isn't it? It's a win for the Philippine economy and the people in the economy, but also the countries across the globe that are now looking to improve their processes and save money at the same time.
Exactly.
Where do you see that sort of trickling down into the economy? Is it just the big BPOs that are cashing in on that,
or I think it's going to be across. I think because the inquiries that have been coming into us haven't all been big BPOs. They've been medium scale. They're not all purely BPO related. Some are in other industries where they just need skills. Let's say engineering, architecture, data processing. So they're not all skills which are just utilizing call center type, audio. It's not all talk, which I like a lot. And what we're just going to be seeing here right now, obviously, as far as I'm concerned, Derek, is that some BPOs will have to let go of their people. But the thing is, there's going to be some friction costs. But what that also means is that for companies coming over here, there's going to be a pool of people who might have been recently let go, who just need a bit of upskilling or reskilling to rejoin again the outsourcing industry over here in the Philippines, which I think is really great. So, you know, this for me is the silver lining for this industry, for the BPO industry. A lot of people will be opening up again and looking at the Philippines, saying, you know, this might be actually the second big wave of BPOs coming or offshoring companies coming to the Philippines.
Absolutely. I see a huge opportunity, in the Philippines to embrace that. And I think the Philippines needs to work hard to stay educated, to stay relevant, and to keep on increasing the value proposition that they're offering so that they don't lose this edge to the competition like Vietnam and India and Eastern Europe as it comes through.
And Derek, we've actually been doing a lot of talks. Actually, we've done several webinars which were targeted for other countries. And we realize that really a lot of what has been done is purely awareness, actually. Not many are familiar with our level of, I guess, English language proficiency until they hear us talking on the webinar. and then they're not aware of the skill level, the number of college graduates which they can get. So a lot of it's just like you're right. It's a lot of marketing, a lot of creating awareness abroad to say that this is a good place for you to take your business.
Yeah. I don't think people are quite aware quite how Anglo-Saxon the Philippines is, It's almost more English than parts of the US, isn't it? It's incredible penetration of English culture. I suppose American culture specifically.
American culture, that's right.
Everything it's all Netflix, it's all YouTube, it's NBA, it's pizza, which is an incredible thing for the viability of commerce to spread from the West over to the Philippines. And I also think there's a big opportunity for Philippines to be the Western gateway into Asia, and again from Asia back into the West, Do you deal at all with China? I actually see a huge opportunity for the Philippines to be the integration gateway for Chinese businesses as they enter the West, because, you know, obviously it's connected to China. There are already trade links, but the Philippines has that language. It has the design capacity. It has all of those sort of functions that the Chinese aren't so equipped with.
Yeah, I think right now what's nice about the Philippines that, you know, and because of our culture and of our proximity, and of course, our familiarity with the Chinese culture, with Chinese people, is that we can do both east and west. We can both do east and west. We're actually getting inquiries from both China and this and the U.S. To do sort of different types of outsourcing here to the Philippines, which for me is great. It's an integration of both that we're doing here right now. And this is actually the more interesting thing that I want to talk about is for many, let's say, startup companies that are based. That want to start off. The Philippines is always a great place to start because, number one, we are a developing country with the same developing country issues of other countries, but it's in English. So they can test things off. The Philippines often becomes a gateway for them to spread their apps or you know, be the place to test the apps before they go to other countries. They go to, say, Singapore, Malaysia, Indonesia, Thailand, because we have a large critical mass of population who can actually utilize the app before they expand. And we've got things like, I don't know if you know, there is a local startup called Acudine. Acudine is sort of an app which purchases receivables so that companies can get liquid again, and then they're able, so that small companies can get money. And it's a really good app, and it's going from the Philippines because it was good for a developing country environment. I think they spread out to Myanmar and other developing countries as well. So it's really a good place that if you think of a good developing country solution or an app that can work for developing countries, you can start off over here and grow it to the other regions where they have the same sort of demographics and developing country characteristics.
Absolutely. And I think a lot of clients come over here, foreign businesses, foreign companies, and they think that, you know, this is really just an opportunity for a call center for basic customer service. But, you know, and you actually have to remind people that this is a bustling, high growth economy, you know, 6% growth year on year. There's 110 million population. There's 650,000 graduates every year. This is a really bustling economy.
We're actually in the demographic sweet spot. We are at an age of our median age is at 23 years old. And of course, prior to COVID, our like you said, the growth was 6%. So that's what is often defined as the demographic sweet spot for many countries. And really, I mean, if you look at it after COVID is done, the fundamentals are still going to be in place. Every call center that we've talked to or people who've done operations here in the Philippines are surprised just by the quality of the graduates that they're getting to work for them. And, you know, and they're easily trainable. And on top of that one, many Filipino workers have what we call in the local language, pagmamalasakit, or, you know, a certain compassion for the work that they do. They go beyond just the work, right? And many of the foreigners often cite that as what they like about working here in the Philippines. The Filipino will find a way to go out of his way to do something better for the job.
And where do you see the Filipinos, and maybe not so much in Manila, but out in across the country in the provinces, where do they see themselves sitting within the global economy? Because I feel that 25 years ago, there was no connection, you know, and the country was pretty much shut off because people were geographically constrained. Now, you know, everything is in the cloud. We're all chatting online. There's basically one globalized economy. Do you think people are, you know, and you studied at MIT, all the MIT courses are available online now. All of this is accessible to the Philippines, the people of the Philippines. And I just see incredible opportunities for those that are aware of it and embrace it. And, you know, they can enter remote careers. They can get incredible jobs. They can literally get a job in Silicon Valley sitting from their home now. Do you see the full awareness of this in the Philippines?
Or do you think
people are still getting used to it?
Because of the high social media penetration, I think everything's emerging right now. I mean, all these different, I mean, for me locally, what really surprises me is this one, that many of the people topping the lawyer's exam, the bar, are no longer from Manila. They're actually from the provinces because now, unlike before, they didn't have access to the files, but now everything's online, right? So they were all given equal access to this one. And same way that many of these offshoring companies are also finding their way out into the regional areas because they usually concentrate around Manila, but they find that there's an equal capacity of these people in the provincial areas. And this is the very important thing that I need to share with you, I think, no? That why I think that the Philippines economy is going to be very strong and that the provinces or the regional areas will be growing quickly as well. In the regional areas, I guess late 70s, many of them were ignored by the national government, right? So many of them actually left for abroad many years ago. And they've been abroad since the 70s. So about 80s, 90s, 2000, they've been abroad for about 30 plus years. Now they're sending back money into the Philippines to develop their home provinces. So you'll see that many of these provinces, real estate's actually improving in these provinces because I work with a company called Philippine Homes. And this is very interesting. This is one of the companies which I want to point out that they are a regional business out of Cebu. But they are the largest real estate marketing company in the Philippines, and they sell all over the world because they take advantage of the OFW economy. Did you know these guys, believe it or not, during the lockdown here in the Philippines, they sold more than 3 billion pesos worth of residential properties during the ECQ because everybody, although we were all locked down at home, so were all the overseas Filipino workers locked down in their own homes abroad. And this army of local sellers were selling properties, first home properties, to all this the Filipino diaspora. And none of these properties were based in Metro Manila. All these properties were based in the regional areas outside of the country. So we're saying that what I'm saying here right now is that yes, these areas are developing fast outside of Manila, and because there's many of us who are based in Manila, very Manila centric, but we're realizing right now that in these areas, people are getting highly educated fast. They don't want to leave, and real estate is improving over that. Means as real estate improves, that's a multiplier effect and a good anchor effect for the other industries which might improve in these areas. So I'm very optimistic about. And there's also, because of this crisis, there's what they call the Balik Provincia or Going Back to the Province program being implemented as well by the government. So I'm seeing a lot of development going back to the provinces as well.
There is an incredible opportunity in the provinces, I think, for everyone in the Philippines and businesses overseas. We often get asked, should people recruit in Manila and base their operation in Manila, or should they go out to the province? And I still think there's better depth, a bigger sort of talent pool and a deeper talent pool in Manila. But you're right, there's incredible universities, and the government, as you said, previously turned its back on the provinces, but now they're really focusing on the second wave cities, on the third wave cities, trying to get all of those up and running. Yep. So that there's enough infrastructure. And, the kicker is that the salaries in the provinces, they can be up to, 50% cheaper, 70% cheaper. It really is incredible, the pressure of Manila and the pressure that it's put on prices and inflation. So
and I think people in the province, I think they're very easily trained. I mean, Filipinos in general are very easily trainable. They can find good universities to if you have BPOs going to the provinces, it's just to partner up with the universities there to find really good graduates to start off there. And I think that's a good way for them to get a good talent pool, because if they do graduate from university, they're easily trainable as far as I'm concerned.
Absolutely. Ajay, you're also involved in a Facebook group called Bounce Back Philippines. Yes. It's 50,000 strong now. And of course, this was born out of the coronavirus and everyone sort of fearing for their futures. And it's aptly named Bounce Back Philippines. Where do you see the bounce back? Are you confident for the future? And is this sort of a year away, or are we heading into a big downturn, you think?
I think, well, number one, what I always think makes things different is the idea of resiliency never factors into this equation. You know, when things started off, we were all very fearful because that was, all things considered, nothing would change. But people adjust, right? They adjust their skills, they adjust their businesses, their resilience has to come about. And what Bounce Back has really been about is about reskilling, upskilling, networking, and connecting people with regard to the business. Okay, it won't grow. We realize that businesses won't grow this way, but there are other ways to pivot the business. Personally, in Bounce Back, I've helped put together the events industry, the restaurant industry, the real estate sales industry, and I'm seeing a lot of local and foreign tech companies who want to help SMEs emerge from this crisis. So Bounce Back has been a really good place where I'm seeing people getting upskilled, reskilled, connected, because it was really a business. It's evolved into a business support group. And I see people emerging from it, you know, saying that, okay, I have to change what I'm doing here right now. And there might be different ways of doing business, or different ways of, or maybe migrating my business online, or developing new skill sets so I can do another business. I see that happening right now, because what Bounce Back has been doing has been building resiliency into the people and giving them the skills to become resilient as well. So, you know, we've gone through typhoons, earthquakes, political crisis here in the Philippines. So people are, you know, naturally built to be resilient, I guess. And this time around, they're having to become resilient, and we're just providing them tools to become more resilient through Bounce Back.
Yeah. It is you know, it's an incredible population, isn't it? And only at the beginning of this year, we had the big volcano erupting, numerous earthquakes, and now, of course, Corona. So it is an incredibly innovative and resilient population. Ajay, thank you so much for your time and your insights, and of course, your positivity about all of this. I'm going to ask if people want to get in contact with you. I fear that you might have, how do you manage all of your email addresses? You must have at least 470 email addresses.
I have several clones managing my email address. But yeah, they can get in touch with me at www.rjledesma.com. That's my website. Or they can email me at rledesma@alum.mit.edu. Glad to talk to you. Glad always to find out, you know, how ways we can collaborate, do better business, and help the economy, especially during this time.
That was Ajay Ledesma of Everything. If you want to get in touch with Ajay, just go to our show notes, which is at outsourceaccelerator.com/295. And of course, if you want to ask us anything, as always, just send us an email to ask@outsourceaccelerator.com. See you next time.